Deep thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. If this episode works, it's meant to be. I left my power supply at my smoke lounge for the PC, which I've been using for the last several episodes. And so I'm running on the old Mac as a backup here. So I've had this dream episode brewing. And I couldn't quite put my finger on it. I still have elements that may or may not be covered in this episode. But I'm calling this one Dream Development. And the purpose of this episode is to discuss with those of you who dream a little exercise that you might find valuable. You're probably already doing it. But since no one ever talks about dreams, really, besides hokey bullshit about what they mean, right? We're going to get into it. So what do I mean by dream development? What I am referencing is the daily amalgamation of everything you learn from previous dreams. So you have a dream, and you wake up, and if you're like most of us, when you're first experiencing this, or you know, maybe you've just done this your whole life, it's just sort of this little fun thing that happens. You only remember like a thimble of the dream, typically. And then you go on about your day, you go on about your life. But the more you analyze your dreams, what you figure out is that if you stack up little lessons that you learn, you must be observant in your dream, especially when you wake up, to realize what's happening. How much of your senses were you using? What did you see? What did that mean to you personally? Did anything from the outside world affect your dream? Are you in one of those frequencies, or are you simply having a dream that is beautifully free-formed? Maybe it uses some of your real-life people that you know. Most of you, like me, will have dream people. They feel familiar to you, but you don't know who they are. They seldom ever have names. That's the interesting thing. You seldom go, "What's your name?" You know, and it's like, "It's Joe." "Oh, hey, Joe." And then you spend the rest of the dream, "Hey, Joe, what's up?" You don't bother with it. You just feel comfortable enough that you're in your own world. And when you're in your dreams, typically you will feel as if you are in command of your dreams. Perhaps not like General Patton, but you will feel that you are obviously the center of attention. Nothing exists in the world without you being in that world, because that's obviously the way it works, right? What I am discovering by waking up every single day and studying my dreams is that they get bigger, they get longer, it's easier to remember them. It just becomes a function of your being. My dreams are becoming so intense and so, I don't know, it's starting to get into a five-sense situation. I'm not gaining any more necessarily command over my body within a dream. So all the instrumentality issues I've been mentioning in previous dream episodes is still true, meaning, you know, my body is more of a figment of my imagination within a dream, but I'm definitely feeling things. I have confirmed in the last, I would say, 7 days that people are touching me and I'm feeling it. That's a profound increase in sensory input from previous dreams that I've had. I do have a few dreams where things touched me, and I think I felt them. But I would say that that mystery's now been solved recently. When I wake up, regardless if I have had 4 hours of sleep or 10 hours of sleep, I am so involved with the dream world, so enveloped by it, that it is like being birthed out of a canal. And what do I mean by that? Obviously, that's a metaphor. when I wake up, I have to push myself out of that world, because even though I am awake in this reality, which I believe we are sharing, it's as if I am in sort of a warm soup, a thick, thick soup of reality that is still hanging on to me, almost as if I had to come up for air, and then I have to push out. I have found that various activities will push me out, but I can still get up and go to the restroom as long as I don't subscribe to this reality that much and get back into bed, go right back into the same dream and continue my reality till it's time to wake up. But when it's time to wake up, I have to engage in various rituals, and it's a fascinating thing that I have found that gets me awake, and one of it's turning the lights on. Turning lights on is over 50% of the process for me to shake out the reality that I just had inside my dreams. But now, as long as you're not having nightmares, I hope that none of you do, you're typically having fairly soothing experiences, regardless of how figurative they are or how specific they are. You're essentially changing the operating system of your soul. You might be dreaming in Windows and you come out into Macintosh, or the vice versa. Alien Software 1, Alien Software 2. And for some reason, I find that light is so infectious for the mind in this reality that it really penetrates. And what's weird about it is, even though, you know, you'll wake up and the sun's up, shining through your window, it still doesn't get you up. Maybe some of you sleep, you know, with your windows unobstructed. I have blinds, but the blinds, yeah, they just dim the light a little bit. Engaging your mind, using your phone, maybe an iPad, that's pretty good, but you can slip right back in. You might lose track of your previous storyline. Getting up and sitting up. Getting up and standing up. Obviously, if you wake up to a phone call, you can shake yourself out pretty darn quick. But I'm talking about when you have complete control over yourself. It gets fascinating. But developing your dreams, and dream development in general, I think has more side effects than meets the eye. If you sat down and said, hey everyone, let's get together. There's 10 of us in a room. We say, look, let's do what we can to log our dreams, to figure out, again, all these five senses, whether or not we're engaging certain ones. Obviously, most of us have sight and sound in our dreams. Do we have touch? We could write all that down. But let me throw you a paradigm shift mechanism in your brain. If you believe that this reality that we're in watching YouTube is the reality, it is the definitive reality that exists, and everything else is just imaginative, when you come out of your dreams and get back in this reality, it will absolutely override the other one. It's almost as if they're jealous cousins of each other, right? One tries to erase the other. You do remember this reality when you're in a dream. I had another dream the other day with Prince. I was at a studio. I was at his house, which is kind of a studio. And there's friends of his and friends of mine, and he's jibing me, and he's making me go through his record collection to pick out a song I've never heard before, and he's going to play it. But he's really being playful with me, like a friend. I'm in my clothes. He's in his clothes. You know, his crazy Prince clothes. I don't sit around thinking about Prince. You know, I mean, I do here, and I got four or five paintings I've done of him in the house, but I don't sit and worship him. I don't play his music every single day and cry. But for some reason, this dude's on my mind. He makes it into my dreams. It's very interesting. But there's one thing I've noticed by not having such a bias for this reality, because you can see on this show, if you watch all the dream episodes, go to the playlist in YouTube and just hit it. If you want to see it in the deepthoughtsradio.com, there's keyword categories that everything's in, and dream is one of them. So you can listen to them all in podcast if you want. But instead of adopting this reality as the reality, what we've been doing in these episodes is starting to say, okay, wait. What is reality, right? We've got plenty of episodes on that subject matter. dreams happen, and dreams and sleep are forced upon us. At least sleep is. I've been doing this show for 3 years this month. And so in a short 3 year period, if lightly, you know, analyzing my dreams and then very seriously analyzing my dreams and analyzing it on a level of, wait, maybe my own assumptions about this reality are, I wouldn't say wrong, but too definitive. I'm in this reality. That's just it. Boy, this is the real one. What's interesting is imagine you were Neo in The Matrix, the movie The Matrix, 1999. Screw those sequels, right? The way the movie works is that he's, you know, he's visited at his apartment. And the chick, whose name escapes me, the character's name escapes me. She comes and gets him and, you know, says, look, you're the one, right? You're Neo. You're the hacker. I think that's what he was. And he's kind of playing coy with her. And then eventually he gets pulled out of the Matrix. And we get to see that he's been in this alternate computer reality. He is a human battery, you know, all this abrupt change to his life. But now let's go back and rewrite the first scene, the first half of the first act. Let's make it an act long. So instead of, I don't know, 10 minutes where he gets pulled out, he spends 30 minutes getting pulled out. And he goes back and he goes forth. He's able to kind of wake up in his pod. He isn't quite pulled out yet. And then he gets put back in the Matrix. And he kind of goes back and forth. What would have happened to his perception of reality had he seen that he was having a full five-sense reality in a virtual world and then wakes up in one as well? I'm going to say that he would be in the Matrix itself, starting to have what he ended up having at the end of the movie, which is this realization that he is in a equally made-up reality. And of course, in the movie, they invert the what is real and what isn't real, right? But let's just say both of these things are equally simulated in our brains. It's the paradigm we adopted as a child. One reality, we have strict rules. At least I think we do. Like I said, mentally insane people don't just fly around the world. They don't lift 10,000-pound cars just because they're crazy. So either we're imposing those rules on all things, or it's simply not possible within this domain. If our soul is truly our identity, and it is the thing that is free, and it can adopt different realities and go between worlds, then that might explain a lot of things, okay? You know, a lot of us struggle from time to time with this world. You get challenged. And depending on how old you are and what you're dealing with, it can be really, really tough. Some people take themselves out of this world because it gets so tough, right? But now what if you started to realize there's a much bigger thing happening here, a much bigger game being played? This is merely a reality that is just as, I don't know, incidental to your existence, your everlasting existence, the soul that cannot hide in the universe, therefore not, it cannot perish in the universe. Nothing can affect it, so it can't be undone. Yet, unlike our vessels, which return back to the soil, the soul is infinite in all dimensions. Well, then maybe this reality starts relaxing a little bit in your mind. This is just this journey. So sometimes it's tough, sometimes it's not. Sometimes you're on level 1, sometimes you're on level 10. If this was a video game and you knew it, and you liked playing video games, which is essentially having a challenge, having a paradigm of existence, and you, instead of sleeping and going into dream mode, you slept and you pulled out into the, I don't know, the game room with everyone else. And you start looking around, you start seeing, you know, thousands of people in some warehouse with their heads down inside this thing or whatever form we have in the other world. Let's just stick with another body. And then you pull out and you're like, whoa, gosh, that was really exhausting. And someone walks up to you, maybe a robot, gives you something to drink. How are you doing, Mr. So-and-so, Mrs. So-and-so? Do you need anything else? Would you like to go to your room? And you're like, yeah, sure. And they say, well, you know, you're going to experience some disorientation. You're going to get your memory back here in the next minute. just relax. And it's fully cool world. So you're like, man, okay, I'm cool. I don't feel painful. You start to, just like a dream when you wake up, you start to forget everything you were just doing. And you go and you relax. And you can spend as much time as you want on the outside, and you can come back into the game, and it just takes over right where it left off. You could be driving down the highway and pop out of that thing. You could always hit your head on the pillow and pull out that way. You never know. What I have found by giving equal credence to the dream world as this world is that your brain starts to do different things with this world as well as the other. I haven't quite flipped into lucid dreaming. I've done that, you know, again, like a handful of times in my lifetime. And unfortunately, I got so excited, I woke up pretty quickly. I get about, I'd say 2 to 5 minutes, if I'm lucky. 5 is probably longer than I've ever had. But, you know, what's time in a dream? How do you track it, right? But the one thing I've noticed by acknowledging this potential side reality is that I can relax a lot more in this world. You no longer fear death, I'll tell you that much. I haven't feared death for a very long time, if I ever did. But now pause that for a second, because I have a new thing. I thought about making the whole episode about this particular thing, but I don't think it would go for an entire hour. So this is sort of a research update. This is going to be an area for commenting, so perk up and listen. And let me know if you've had this experience, because I think it's also extremely fascinating. It could be a whole subject matter to cover if we could sort of pierce it a little bit better. When I lay down, there's two things I'm going to talk about. One is the transition from sleep, or from being awake to being asleep. And one is this sort of instant history thing that happens to me. It's fascinating. When I lay down at night, you know, your brain's going a million miles an hour. You could be, you know, I can be, you know, sleeping for maybe the first 5 minutes as if I am, you know, 1 millisecond from being in the deepest sleep in the world. And then all of a sudden I wake back up, you know, a little bit. Other times I'm just churning on things. You know, it's like I got this math problem or something I'm trying to solve, you know, some problem I'm trying to solve. But out of thin air, what will happen is that I will have you have to track the chronology of this, okay? Instantaneously, I will have one of those moments of like, oh my God, I forgot about this thing, or I have done something wrong, or I have done something wrong to someone. Feeling, okay? It's probably a little strong in the last example, but I will imagine a tiny pocket of linear time where something has gone wrong. And in that pocket of time, like a cartouche of time, okay, I will fantasize into existence. I use the word fantasize as an inadvertent phrase, a full history of something that never occurred. And it will be one of concern. Oh my God, I told this person I would do this thing for them, as an example. I can't remember the last, you know, ones I've had, but I know this has happened to me for years. And I start, you know, racing in my brain to fix the problem. Within 30 to 60 seconds, I realize that that thing never happened. Those people may or may not exist. And the whole thing was imagined within a split second. I imagine a false history of a subject, and I panic over it, and then I wake up. I don't wake up, but I just kind of pull my head out and go, whoa, where the hell did that come from? It has happened to me so often that when I start to study the mechanics of the brain to have that occur to me, it's going to have to be occurring one of two ways, perhaps both, but one of two ways for sure. Better be careful about how I say for sure. Either there's a chemical thing that happens in the brain while it's going to sleep that can architect this utter feeling of long-term memory and use the power of imagination, which may drive the dream machine, to give me the sense that there's a pocket of time that something happened. And it is seldom a pleasant thing. Maybe I'm having pleasant ones because they're pleasant. I think of those as daydreams or night dreams or sort of that twilight zone thing. But oftentimes it has a little tiny smidgen of panic in it. Not debilitating panic, but you know, like, oh my gosh, that kind of feeling. And then I have, in the last 10 years, I would say, I've been catching it and I'll say, oh yeah, that doesn't exist. Those people don't exist. And what's interesting is once I acknowledge that it didn't exist in my own mind to myself, it vanishes like a puff of smoke. I no longer can really track what I was thinking, but it happens. My ulterior theory, which is a little more far out, but then again, maybe not. Maybe we let that little phrase get to us a little bit too much. Well, that's just crazy. That's tinfoil hat stuff, and you run away from that, right? But it's the truth sitting right in front of you. Maybe it's our soul reaching out into the universe and either seeing something we have experienced in a previous life, different dimension, or we're seeing someone else's strand of thought. Something is happening in the neighborhood, and you're simply sharing their emotion for 1 second, and then you're realizing, that's not me, and maybe they're sharing yours. Maybe they're panicking over what you are truly debating in your mind, which is based on reality. Not sure how it happens, right? But now let's take a combined look at this whole thing. And I hope that at least one of you have had this experience. It's interesting, we debate what time is all the time, right? It's, in my opinion, it's an illusion created by the storage of past events. And, you know, we can call that time if we want, the bucket of things that happened to you, your history log of everything that's happened to you. I was young and a lot smaller, you know, some 35 years ago. Let's say 45 years ago. But if this reality is something that we have a consensus on, we create it. We create our history, like I said. Maybe this is a little tidbit, like a playground. For those of you who program, you know what playgrounds are. It's a little area where you guys can test code and you know, just see how commands work. You're not building an application. You're just learning how to code in this new language, these new commands. It's a playground. Perhaps this is just a little playground for reality. Certainly, dreams are little playgrounds. I call it the student films of the gods. What if I'm just simply sensing a mechanism that's involved with manifesting reality? Because there's an overall consensus that holds the physics that makes this world occur. I can't overwhelm anything that's going on here because there's too much projection into the system. Perhaps this is written by some outside force, written by us before we came here, and it simply follows these rules. In a dream, you manifest reality. You do. You can panic in a dream, and all of a sudden you're in a panicky situation. The people, places, and things have created themselves, and you're living in it. Obviously, I'm not having dreams about visiting Frank Sinatra. He's not in my era. I didn't worship that guy as a kid. Prince was, and so that's who I drag into the vision. What has always puzzled me, and I guess I shouldn't say puzzled, but something that I question is, when you do run into real people in your dreams, are they the real souls visiting you in your dreams? Are they a manifestation that you have? I always thought, you know, sort of like the Santa Claus story, where he visits everyone in a single night. What if you're Michael Jackson? You have, probably conservatively speaking, 2 billion fans, and you die, and you want to comfort all your fans. You're a soul. You can move around. Time isn't really constraining you anymore. Would it be possible as Michael Jackson to visit the entire world of people that would be concerned, comfort them, spend as much time as you want with each individual, find some very interesting fans and spend more time with them? Maybe. But the other thing that's very interesting, to go on to the second topic here, is that moment where we go to sleep. I've only tried and succeeded one time without trying, okay, to be conscious when the transition occurs. And boy, tell me if you guys have pulled this off before. You are awake, but you're drifting. You know, you're, within seconds, you're going to go to sleep. For those of you who go to sleep real fast, you're the candidates to really pull this off. And if you dream. But to see your consciousness float into dream state consciously, such that when you wake up, you remember the experience. I have had this happen to me one time in 2015. My girlfriend and I were going to bed. And like all couples in the first, you know, 15 to 30 minutes, you sort of spoon each other and cuddle and that kind of thing. And she was to my left and we're hopping in bed and I went up behind her. And as soon as I got tucked in behind her, I'm staring, you know, like 2 inches from her, the backside of her back. I felt myself thrust into dream mode. And the only thing I can say that is visually remotely like it, which is really funny, is that Tron Legacy, when Sam goes into the computer, there's this sort of, I don't know, pixel warping thing that happens. It's sort of like the, you know, the light speed thing that happened in Star Wars. When I saw the film, I didn't like the transition at all. I thought it was such a waste of transporting from outside world to inside computer. If you ever saw the first movie in 82, they blew that thing out. It's one of the coolest scenes when he's getting pulled into the computer and you're swimming in this tunnel and then you go down to this planet that's all pixelated with clouds and stuff. You know, they couldn't do that again, of course, because we need to modernize it, but just to have a big thrust of pixels was like, okay, boring, no imagination, go figure, Gen X. But what was weird, it was exactly like that in my mind. I swear to God, there was even a sound, a kind of a swooshing, weird sound that happened to me. I must have been utterly exhausted to pull that off. But why is that so difficult to experience? I was probably a year into this show. Sorry, no, I just started this show. I was a year into MKUltra Radio. I think it's strange when things like that are difficult. You know, any of you have gone to a carnival and you've tried to throw the rings over the thing or you try to hit the baseballs against the targets that aren't really there or the ones that are moving with the BB gun or whatever. Hey, you don't do that very often. There's a trick to it. You know, they got the odds stacked against you. Of course, they're making you do something that's hard because they're going to give you a big stuffed animal if you pull it off, right? But when you dream, oh, I put it this way, when you go to sleep every single night of your life, minus a couple days of your whole life that you might stay up 36 hours or whatever, 48 hours. That's 365 days a year times how old you are. That's a lot of practicing, folks. And think about it. You wake back up maybe at least once at night and you go right back to bed. You go right back into dreaming. If you wake up and roll over at 3 a.m. and you've been asleep since 10, you're going to go right back to bed, usually, unless you've been drinking. So why can't this happen? Why is it the dreams are the most shrouded things that we don't talk about? As if we've been programmed not to talk about it, like I said in the previous episode. Like the host looking at something they're not supposed to look at in Westworld. Well, it doesn't look like anything to me, right? I think this is a frontier. And, you know, you have dream clinics around the world. God bless them. But they are looking at dreams from all the research I've seen. They're looking at dreams on such a myopic technical level that it's almost like they're taking the soul out of soul music. You know, it was Al Jarreau, the jazz singer. He said he once went to a university. He said he flew in on a private jet. He gets into a car. He comes to university, stands in front of these kids, and they sing one of his songs, "Anyone Want to Go Dancing on the Roof?" And he said he's at a black college, and so he expected to have a pretty soulful performance from these people, and he said they sang it like a church choir, all stiff, no soul, no variant to the attack and decay of the notes. There's nothing going on. No one would ever dance. No one would ever feel a single thing that he wrote into this song. And he stopped them, and he said, "What the hell are you doing? This is jazz. This has feeling. This is emotion. This is why this whole form of music was created. It was created by putting down the sheet music and playing from your soul. I feel like that's a bit how the dream clinics work on it. When you get a book about all the things that your dreams mean, it's a clinical breakdown of something that is more dynamic than any book could ever possibly document. So why do that to yourself? Why erase the freeform paradigm when you can leave it open? I think dreams and jazz go together, don't they? I've had an interesting experience, which is sort of hard to describe. And again, a lot of opportunity to comment here in case you've had a similar experience. It's going to sound a little bit kooky, but it's actually pretty wonderful to experience. You know when you have a smell trigger your past? You know, like, or even a taste. Taste does it too. When I smell or taste Fig Newtons, I go back to my past in the 70s because that was a sort of a mainstay treat of the grandparents that I had. There's a lot of things that'll do that, but that is one of them that just nails me. But there's certain weird smells that I think were created out of whatever was in the reality back then that I got, that I will get every once in a while. And I got it the other day at a trade show. I was smelling this and I was like, oh my God, that's that smell. It just took me back. And I didn't know exactly where I was, but it was definitely my childhood. Well, I think I can say safely that what I have experienced in probably the last, I don't know, I would say over the course of 20 years, and I don't know if it goes back to my beginning of my life, but I notice it now because of this show and analyzing things so intensely, especially dreams. I will be somewhere in the world. Sometimes I'm driving my car, sometimes I'm in my house. Often it will be in my car, and I think it's because of the sensory input that I'm getting. But I will see a totally different world overlay over the world that I am in. What do I mean? Well, it's going to be a little tough to describe, but I will say this. I don't have any feeling. I don't have any sound. It's all sight. This used to happen a lot when I was drifting off to sleep. But there, it will happen. A certain lighting of a time of day will trigger it. Certain times, if I'm driving my car at night, sometimes it happens. It'll happen at day and I'll see night. But I have been seeing these different versions of reality, like this world, people, structures, cars. It appears to be future. Pretty intense future. I would say potentially 100 years in the future. It's really strange. It only happens for a few seconds, I would say, but it's almost as if I hit you with a flash from an old camera, right? I pop you with the flash, and then you see the imprint of the flash in your eyeballs, right? Someone pops you with the brights as they drive by. So I will see this, and it's an absolute stunning detail. One of them I could say is, if any of you have seen sort of the Stanley Kubrick / Steven Spielberg movie AI, the one that Kubrick was working on when he passed away. There's some pretty fabulous worlds in that movie. I saw one the other day. It's sort of between that crazy reality, which is like, I don't know, 300 years in the future, down to today. Somewhere in between. Things are clean. Things are beautiful. Things are designed amazing. What I think I just saw within the last couple days was one that was sort of it was a nighttime city scene. And it was like a diner or something at night. I'm sure this sort of thing exists multiple places around the world, but there's something about it that is more advanced than this reality. And there's no flying cars or anything. And, you know, perhaps I am looking around the planet, you know, like remote viewing or something, but it seems to be something, it comes with a lot more than just sight. The other sense that happens is a sense of emotion, of emotional context to that world. And the emotional context is always the same. It's a beautiful, balanced place. I want to say it's Earth. could be Earth, definitely humans in there. I'm in there. And I see myself as a participant immediately. Like, this is where you were in this world. This is where you will be in this world, or whatever the hell this place is. Sometimes they're sort of remote. I don't want to say desert communities, because I don't want you to think of sand dunes and, you know, tents and things. But it's more of a kind of a rustic, maybe Australian location. But it's very developed. The architecture's sometimes unbelievable and huge. Like, I used to get triggered when I was a kid in probably in the 90s playing the first-person shooter games, where you would have artists struggling to create these worlds with very little processor power. So they would simply create a lot of polygon worlds. And, you know, they're trying to make it reality, but they'd say it's like, this is a whole cement city or something like that. And I would play the game and I would get triggered to go, oh my God, there's that other place that's sort of like this. It's interesting. What is interesting is the more I undiscipline myself from this being the only reality, the more this is happening. And it never gets to a point where it's dangerous, right? I'm not like driving down the highway and all of a sudden I can't see reality and I'm going to wreck my car or anything like that. It's strictly an inner flash of a reality, and it usually feels wonderful. A lot of times I've been driving down from Los Angeles back to Orange County, and there's certain places, and usually dusk is a really good trigger point for me. And I just start feeling like a highway in this other world, and they're all different. It's the thing. I don't want you to think it's one place. Each is different. But it starts to turn into this beautiful place, and the sentiment of this world is the following. All of us are working to a common good. There are no ruling classes to screw with us. Every single thing that is wrong with this world is gone. And it's not any type of feeling of like, oh gosh, I really wish the world was like this, and now I'm having this vision. Nah, it's just happening. It's interesting. I think it has to do with dream development. Dream development could be also categorized or paraphrased as reality agnostic. You're no longer regimented to whatever you think was real. You can choose sort of what is real. Now, let me throw this at you. We know that we perceive the world differently than all other people, right? I perceive it different than you perceive it. Have you ever met anyone that loves a city and you hate it? You know, they're like, oh my God, I can't wait to live in, you know, some freezing cold state that has never seen 80 degrees temperature and the people are weird and you go there to visit and you just, or maybe you live there for a little while and you just can't get along with anyone. Everything they do just bothers you. And you didn't want it to be that way. It just, you could never make it work for you. But you know where you live. Those people can't stand where you live. And you're in like, you know, semi-tropical Southern California with palm trees and 73 weather most of the year. And nothing gets that harsh either way. And you're like, why wouldn't you want to live here? We got beaches that are damn near a tenth of a mile before you get to the water. It's, everyone's nice and friendly and they want to network you into any career that you want, anything that you want in life. Everyone's here to help you. And people hate it. And you're like, what the hell's wrong with you? Because you perceive this place different than they do, and they perceive their place different than you do. You know that we taste things differently. Some people like burned marshmallows. Some people like lightly brown marshmallows. Why is that? Well, we're built different. For one of those arguments, it's a matter of taste. Physically, your taste buds work differently. For other people, it's sort of feeling like this is your home. I always wonder why people from Germany found themselves in Kansas, of all places. Now, Germans have settled all over America, but for whatever reason, a gigantic portion of them loved the Midwest of America. I couldn't figure it out for the longest time until I started getting pictures from an old girlfriend of mine who lives in Germany. She's from Germany, and she would send me her home. And I was looking at it going, my God, this could be Kansas. Now, southern Germany is much more voluptuous with hills and stuff, but there's a part of northern Germany that is very Midwestern. Perhaps the Southern Germans go to places in America that have very mountainous, while the other ones from the north are going to the more flat area. Because it feels like home. They're different. Now, let's take that preference that we see here in this world, and let's apply it to ourselves when it comes to reality. You feel comfortable in reality, most likely. You know that there's people who dress up like Ninja Turtles. They are living in their home wearing a costume of a turtle. They've seen every movie. They know every line. Out of all the turtles, either they're one of the, I think there's four turtles, right? Or they're a fifth turtle. For those of you who grew up in the 70s, you're going to get a kick out of this because you probably remember, for any of you who are Kiss fans back in the day, and I'm talking about the band Kiss, with Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley and Peter Criss and Ace Frehley. They wore this, you know, four different makeups. They had four different backstories if you watched Kiss Meets the Phantom. And as kids, you would be one of those four characters for a while. And then at one point, you create a fifth character, right? Because you want to be a part of the band. You want to be a part of that world. And it was this escape in your brain. Now, that's why writers believe that writing in fiction is super duper important to the human mind because it allows us to exercise our perception of different what? Realities, right? There's a ton of people in this world who have picked their career by seeing a movie. They saw a profession, they saw a responsibility, they saw an impact of that professional responsibility on this world. And so they wanted to go and do it. I got a book in my house that's based on the HAL 9000 from 2001, A Space Odyssey, and how many artificial intelligence programmers we gained by simply seeing a fictional character in a movie at a time when we didn't have enough processor power to really create an artificial intelligence. And so they studied AI and probably are some of the leading AI programmers in the world. And this book is all about some of the heads of state of that research and development that said, man, that was cool. Let's make that. Pretty wild, right? I think the folks that would be the best equipped to do dream exploration are the folks that dream habitually, dream in great detail, but also when they're in this world, they have the ability to disengage a little bit. And I don't mean it in any dysfunctional way. I think true genius is the ability to sit in this world and maintain a foot in both universes, if not multiple universes, right? I'm sitting here right now, staring at my computer, doing an episode to you, and inside my mind's eye, I can see two dreams that I've had in the last, probably had it 2 days ago. I actually woke up and drew some stuff into my phone because it was, one of them was so funny. One is the Prince dream. I can still see him next to me on my left, and there was this little inlet into the floor where he had this little setup where you can kind of go down and sit on the step, and there was his library of recordings. It was sort of in some sort of like almost CD thing. Behind us, to my left, are some of his bodyguards and family, like a Maite over there, and then behind me, this sounds crazy, right? And behind me is my kid and my girlfriend. And music's playing and people are just having a good time. Not too loud, you know, like music playing lightly in the background. He's just jibing me, man. He's just having a blast because he knows that I really want to hear everything that's in this box. And he's like, pick one, pick one. And I picked it and I threw it at him and he literally caught it. And he's like, he was doing games like, oh, you don't want to hear that one first. You know, and so I'm looking at like, I don't know what anything sounds like, right? But I want to hear it all, right? So he's messing with me. So I got that in my head. Almost like it happened to me yesterday, right? The other one was really funny that I don't know what the dream was all about, but there was a moment in the dream where there was a character, a person, a dream friend, right? That was sort of moving from point A to point B, and I was there and I was saying, oh, there you are. You know, one of those kind of moments. And I said, what have you been doing? And I could see something under his t-shirt. And he picks up his t-shirt. It's on his belly. It's on the right side of his gut, or left side of his gut. And it's this line that goes down. It's a squiggly-ass line that goes down and goes across his gut. And it's made of, like, foam core, like a foam, almost like a the spongy kind that can turn into stickers, you know. And it was of varying depths, and it looked like a cartoon outline, literally an outline of a cut in his stomach. It was all cartoony. It was actually white. And I think maybe the center had some color in it. But above, right where it turned, it went down the left side of his body about 3 inches and then turned across his gut and went about 10 inches across his gut. And it had in fancy kind of font, so like a French kind of font, it said something about, like, it said, it's like, Sergio got me. And I looked at him, and what I realized in my mind, this is what my mind's illustrating in seconds, right, was that this guy went off and saw a movie that was about a guy that cut people. And it must have been a comedy, okay, because it looked like this sticker thing was handed out at the movie theater. And so you could wear this thing, and it was a marketing scheme. It was a brilliant marketing idea, right? That you would wear this thing outside the theater, and it was a way to promote the movie and tell your friends you'd seen this funny movie where this guy, I guess, cut people. And it was nothing gross about it, but of course, cutting a belly would be obviously hard to make funny, okay? But I remember staring at it, and I'm going, oh, did you see a movie? Is that what this is about? And he's like, yeah. And I'm just laughing in the dream. I'm like, that is utterly hilarious and brilliant, right? So I woke up and I drew it on my phone. And shit like that happens, you know? And what that does is that puts such a pin in my brain for a fantasy experience that didn't happen, that happened in a dream, that when I'm sitting here talking to you, I can reminisce about it like it really happened. None of that happened in this reality. It happened in the other reality. Well, how is it that things are getting so beautifully profound? I mean, I've had dreams at 17 while staying with my grandparents that I remember to this day. I had a baby in this dream when I was 17. I didn't have my kid till I was 25, but there's a baby, and I'm taking care of her. It's a little girl. And I'm in this front room, my grandparents, and all of a sudden, you know, I put her down on the sofa to rest. She's literally just a baby, brand new, man. And then all of a sudden I look over and she's in this shoebox mechanism. It was like a shoebox about the size of her body, and she's all wrapped up nice in there. And the shoebox had a little bit of electronics in it, and it was keeping her safe. It was making sure she didn't have any SIDS or anything like that, right? And I remember, you know, it was sort of alarming at first to go, oh my God, you know, is this thing going to hurt my child? And I was looking at it, and my grandmother came back in the room. What's going on, you know? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess she's okay. She's in this thing. That was a million years ago, people. But I remember it like it was yesterday. When that occurs, you have a dream so profound that you can remember it when you're awake as if it happened in real life. There's something very interesting about that. It became a mini little reality. And I think that's fascinating. You might call it, as a scientific exercise, cross-pollination between realities. I was going to bed last night. I thought, for some reason, the song Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds popped in my brain. And, you know, sadly, I'm not a Beatles fan. I don't dislike them or anything, but just before my time. What I really didn't like about the Beatles, I think, when I was a kid, was that they were so famous that when I would see them on TV, it was all the screaming kids. I never owned the albums. I couldn't just enjoy it by myself, right? So it's a stupid reason, but that's the reason. But anyway, I started thinking about, you know, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, which is supposedly about acid. In the Sky with Diamonds started to make sense to me last night. And for those of you who put this together decades and decades ago, you're going to laugh your ass off at how long it took me to put this together. But when you're on acid, one of the things that happens sometimes is that you look up in the sky, and the sky is geometry. It's like sacred geometry, diamonds in the sky. And every single, I don't know, overexposed point in your retina turns into a pinpoint, and then around that point, it draws sacred geometry, like the circular kind that you've seen a million times in floor tile arrangements. Those guys were fucking tripping balls when they saw that stuff. I guarantee you. That's how it all came together. But it also draws lines between them in the sky. It's wild. In fact, my buddy took me outside on my first trip, and he goes, look at the sky. He said, I didn't want to. I was having so much fun inside, tripping out. He says, you got to look at the sky. Here's a blanket. Lie down. Look up. He's seeing the same thing I'm seeing. And that's wild, all right? That is fucking freaky. Seeing the same thing while you're tripping is almost tantamount to going to bed in the same house with someone else and saying, I'll see you in my dreams, and it really happens. And you wake up, and you're like, oh, wasn't that cool? Oh, God, that was great. You know, that missile fall on the sky was really weird. That doesn't happen, right? Let me know if that's ever happened to you. What I would love to have happen in this world is that the discussion about dreams becomes a mainstay article of topic between us as human beings. I think what will happen, again, is I think that, you know, I have faith in the children of this world because they aren't so indoctrinated into paradigms. They're not limiting themselves as much. They haven't limited everything away that is beautiful. They haven't been taught racism. You know, they haven't been taught their limitations out of pure bullshit, right? And so they're the ones that are probably solve all the mysteries of the world if we could just stop treating them like idiots, like children, you know? For the parents that say, oh my God, I want my kid to grow up too fast. Well, yeah, you don't want to show them beheading videos online or try to take away their gender through, you know, watching HBO. But what you want to do is treat them like adults when it comes to technology. Say, hey, this is how this works. I know you can understand it because you're smart. You know, if you're really existential, you say, look, I know that you were just recently somebody else and you just recently came back into this body. And so you probably, you know, have a chance of having been a physicist on the other side or some musician on the other side. And I'm simply going to make you remember how good you are at these things. So what do you think gravity is? We have two theories. Which one do you think is right? And the kid will just go, oh, well, you know, if that's this and this is this, that doesn't work. But this one over here is pretty good. But, you know, I think you're forgetting this. But we don't treat kids like that, do we? We're like, oh, I'm so sorry you're so dumb, you child. But Wolfie taught kids the dreaming is another world, a real one, just as real as this one. However, it doesn't feel like this one. Right? To compare two things is sort of foolish, right? Isn't football a sport? Isn't baseball a sport? Isn't the extreme sports where the kids ride rails and go half tubing or surfing or whatever? But none of them have anything in common except it's considered a sport. It has competition in it and usually has some physical aptitude or coordination that's a part of why we call it a sport. So reality and reality, that's the same. What ends up creating one reality versus another is a different bag of things, different bag of tricks, right? You might say, well, this one's real. Why? Because this one's better. Oh, really? How's it better? Well, feel it. It's better. You know, you really get to do things in this. You stay more awake in this reality than the other reality. Okay, touche. But I can't fly in this reality, can I? I can't go on stage with Prince and sing, can I? So why is this one better again? Perhaps they're equal in different ways. There's the age-old saying that we're all born equal. I have some friends in Los Angeles that say, we ain't all equal. But I think the way that that is meant to be is that everyone has their special something, and yours may not be as celebrated as others, right? You know, let's say you could write and direct a movie. Well, that's the one that's really celebrated. But if you're, I don't know, really good at playing the spoons or cooking or taking care of kids or loving your wife or husband, that one's like whatever. You know, the most difficult ones are the ones that are so minimized, right? I think there has to be a reason why we must sleep. You know, for those of you who have never heard any of the other episodes, long timers, bear with me because I want to make sure everyone comes away with this thought. If you're going to jump into one of my dream episodes, I want to put this into your brain before it's over. If dreaming is simply something, or excuse me, sleeping is something that is a result of needing to sleep, needing to rest your body, needing to supposedly heal your body. And then we have this weird biological clock. We do. We got this weird biological rhythm inside our brains that says, look, you typically go to bed at 10. And if you start to deviate from typically going to bed at 10, at 11, you're going to be really freaking tired. That is a reality. Whether it be where we are in the universe, whether or not our souls are literally on some timer for the vessel, I don't know why, okay? And there's a bunch of flippant answers as to why. Believe me, I'm aware of all the flippant answers. Well, you gotta rest, you're tired. Okay, if you spend an entire day goofing off, sleeping, messing around, you'll still be tired at 10 if that's when you go to bed. It's your biological rhythm. But now if you relaxed a lot, you really took it easy, man, your body has no torn muscles, you've eaten well, not too much, but you've eaten well, you're just a healthy person. Why can't you stay up 2 or 3 days? Why can't you just electively go, I'm just going to skip sleeping. I don't really need it. I have no injuries. I'm not ill. I'm not trying to fight off a cold. Body's healthy. Why is this imposed on you? Perhaps it's something that intelligent design put into us to ensure that this cycle doesn't get all screwed up, because those outside of the cycle don't get along with society. Because when we're in village times or cave times or whatever, depending on whatever the hell happened in the past, you needed to be in sync with the rest of the tribe. Perhaps that's just as easy as that. You know, I think it's fascinating that when women get together, their menstrual cycles all go together. That's phenomenal. Isn't that really, really weird? You know, we go past those little realities sometimes without thinking about it. And it's like, okay, back in the day, ladies and gents, I think the ladies know this already, but when women had to go through this phase, they would go outside the tribe. And they would, I've seen it in this reality right now, it still exists. Women in more primitive tribes around the world will go to a river or stream. It's not a raging river, but some type of stream, and they will spend their week or whatever, 3 to 5 days, and this, it's not far away, but it's, you know, it's within the defending distance of the males, but they'll be outside the village, and they will take turns being in the river, because there were no sanitation napkins or anything to help them out. It just keeps them clean. That still happens to this day, because they're all in sync. We are designed amazingly, let's put it that way. I find that one of the things that gets into sync is dreaming. Not the dreams themselves, but the frequency of dreams. And for those of you who have spouses, I would be interested to know that if the husband dreams a lot, does the spouse dream a lot, or vice versa? I know that when I have lived with my girlfriends, I'll be dreaming like crazy in the other room. And to the degree I dream, the other person dreams. We separate. You know, she'll spend some time at her place or whatever. And I get reports back, there's no dreaming. So here's sort of the commenting homework for you guys. You guys are so brilliant. If I could just sponge up all your brains, that'd be a fantasy for me. What other ways can we develop our dreams? What other things can we do? How do we analyze them? Again, let's not wait for a university to write some bullshit document, to get a grant, to do something very left brain before we know anything more about dreams. And let's not dive off into people making money off people trying to translate what those dreams mean. This is it. We are the citizens of this planet. We're here. We own this place. It's our responsibility. We want to be enlightened. Well, there's a million ways to be enlightened. What does enlightened mean? To see more. That's it. Go see my episode on enlightenment, right? I think we just need to start owning things. There's a lot of you who are self-starters and you're what we call doers. Then you and I are very similar. What's a doer do? Well, the kind of person that gets into a situation, that is perhaps an event that's being coordinated at your church or at your work or within some community. You're going to have a barbecue or whatever, a family reunion or family event. And you have certain people standing around going, well, who's bringing the hot dogs, you know? And they won't lift a finger to do anything. And within seconds, you're there setting up tables, getting the barbecue ready, making sure whoever can cook is on that thing, and you're setting it up and doing the logistics, right? Well, if you're one of those people, then you're part of this dream team. Your assignment is to figure out more about dreams, more about the distinctions between that reality and this reality. And what you want to do, in my opinion, be very careful about trying to take what you read from a book and pull it into this conversation. You can do it, but let's make sure it's something very exceptional to the rule of interpreting dreams and what sleep means, right? Try not to go off and do the biological explanations of dreams, because those are so sterile. And, you know, it's what every kid knows. It's what anyone could assume into, you know. You could basically go in and say, I'm going to give you a test on what sleeping's all about, and you'll get an A+, right? Because nothing's profound in the test. It's the basics. We are looking to take this two-sided coin. One side is all the crap that you've been told your whole life, and we want to flip it over to the other side, which has barely ever been discussed, barely ever been researched, and we want to read what's on the other side. I'd like to know if any of you have sensed your transition from being awake to being asleep, to being in dream mode. Were you ever conscious to the degree you can remember it when you wake up? Have any of you had the experience of the projected history that I've talked about? Within a second, you manifested some history. It's almost people with no names, and you have some responsibility within resolving this, and then you go, oh, none of that exists. None of this is real. Have any of you had an alternate reality triggered when you're traveling the world, when you're messing around, triggered by a smell, triggered by the daytime lighting, anything? What do we have to gain if we can pierce some of this reality? I think we can enjoy this world a hell of a lot more, right? Again, let's say that there's a few of you out there that look at your life and you're like, oh man, I have fucked everything up. It's so messed up. My job is messed up. What I wanted to do with my life is messed up. You know, why can't I win? You know, those kind of feelings. It's feelings that lead to more feelings in that same area. And I could step up to you, surprise you, walk up to you and go, you know me, right? You're like, oh my God, you're the dude from that show. And I'm like, yeah, come with me for a second. Just put all this crap down. Trust me, you're all right. It's all going to be here when you get back. In fact, we're not even going to consume any time out of this reality. You're going to be in this time bubble with me. And you're like, okay, I got nothing else to do. Let's pull this off. What are you going to do? And I take you and I pull you into some alternate reality. And it's hovering over the one that you're in. And I see, you see that down there? You see this reality up here? And you're like, oh my God, where the hell am I? I'm like, well, they're in one of infinite realities that exist. You know when you dream? And you're like, yeah. And I go, well, that's just you touring through the infinite realities that exist. And you, by the way, are a creator, because your creator's given you the opportunity to create. Again, like I said in the previous episode, you ever wonder how these dreams are so photoreal? What are you, a computer? Are you a 3D artist? Are you your own rendering engine? You get all the lighting right. You get all the sound right. You actually dream up other people's faces, places, and things. You dream up skyscrapers and spaceships and whatever. How are you doing all that? You can't do that during the day. I mean, you can if you daydream. But if I give you a pen and or a bunch of paint and a canvas and I say, paint it now. Paint what you saw in your dream. You can't do it. Unless you're Sid Mead, right? Even he tells me he can't get what he thinks in his mind down to the canvas, but his worst day is God's best day, right? But we have this experience together. You can spend as much time up here with me and ask me all the questions about reality. And in the end, what you really realize is the one you're in is one that perhaps maybe you chose to be in. You didn't maybe specifically choose all the challenges that you're having. Specifically, But you may have said, you know what, last time I went in, it was level 2. Yeah, I had a good time, but you know, in the end, even though I was super famous for this or that or whatever, I had 22 kids and it all went well and everyone turned out to be wonderful. No one died before they were supposed to die. I died of natural causes. I'm looking for some more grit, you know, and I chose level 5. And I guess this is what level 5 looks like. And I go, yeah, you did. You totally chose that. You didn't want to write the whole game out. You didn't want to write every single thing that could happen to you and just live out some script. You left a lot of variables in there. Now, you ready to go back down? Warts and all. Challenges and all. You're like, yeah, I guess I chose it. I'm like, yeah, and you know what? You're going to be okay. Because as soon as your vessel's done down there, guess where you go? And you're going to go, here? And I say, yeah. We're going to go anywhere you want to go, man. You'll be able to take a break. Maybe you want to go back down to level 4. Maybe you'd like to do level 2 again. Or maybe level 5 turns out to be more satisfying than you could possibly imagine. Like the toughest video game in the world. And eventually, you solved all the puzzles. You rescued Zelda. And you're like, yeah, you're right. I'll see what I think when I'm done. And you go back down into your body. And just like the guy in Twilight Zone that had his reality where he changed it and got rid of everyone in the world and eventually wished everybody back. And he accepted his world, warts and all. And then when stuff happens, you literally go home that day from this little experience that we had. And you get like a notice in the mail that you're being audited by the IRS, your power's being turned off tomorrow, and all this other stuff. And you just look at those pieces of paper, and they're not going to kill you. They're not going to put you in jail. And you just go, yeah, I'm going to deal with this. And you know what? Maybe I got some more bumps. Maybe I got a really rough road for the next year or two as I get rid of these problems I got in front of me right now. But in the end, I know it's going to be okay. I chose this. I've been given everything I need to overcome these obstacles. Even though at times you may not believe you can, you can. Maybe dreams are nothing more than a confirmation of such a thing. Maybe dreams are nothing more than a confirmation that there are other realities that you can be in that are totally at your will. Do you need your body in a dream? Eh, I think you don't. I think that you exist in those dreams floating around, warm in your blankets, warm in your dream. Yeah, you're different places and you don't really have your bed attached to your back. You're not lying down horizontally, but you have the same comfort, the womb of a dream. Maybe people who don't dream absolutely love reality, this reality, and so they don't need it. If dreams are the sort of the psychiatrist's sofa, the chaise lounge that you're lying down on, right? Maybe when you're totally content with all things, there's no mysteries. Maybe that's what it is. Has nothing to do with being satisfied or unsatisfied. It's just, you're totally content. Well, what's wrong with that? You don't need dreams. You're living one. But the more that you stretch out your brain and you're like, man, I've eaten this reality up 4 or 5 times, right? I have eaten the machine. The machine hasn't eaten me. And now you're just sitting there and you're like, I want some more. I want some more stuff to just devour. Dreams show up and go, all right, well, let's get you oriented to what you could possibly do. Then you can pick it, you know? Sort of like college used to work back in the day. First 2 years help you declare the major for the last 2 years. And get your ball bearings, you know, together. Get your orientation together. Where am I? What do I like anymore? Oh, that used to be something I wanted to do. And then I did it for 10 years and I don't want to do it anymore. You know? I want you to feel in control of your life. Dreams are your playground to practice all the things that you might want to do in this world. And what you need to understand, I think, is that dreams, I believe, at times can carry major metaphor and symbolism for what you really want to do in life. It may not be literal. If you keep dreaming of a location, for instance, that's much different than the location that you live, Perhaps you live in a rural town. It's dirt everywhere. All the cars are filthy constantly because everyone's driving on dirt roads. Everything's made of brick buildings. But you keep dreaming of the big city. Maybe need to foray into the big city. Get it out of your system. Go take a vacation first. Maybe stay with a friend for a month. Walk around the city. See if it's what you want. A lot of times you'll find out where you live is exactly where you want to be, but you have to shake it out of your system. I bet you won't dream about it that much if it's not where you want to be. But you might go to the big city and look around and go, this is what I want, concrete and steel. I don't want to see any trees or grass, you know. But it represents something else for you, some other major arc of opportunity. But maybe you want a tropical island. Maybe you visit Hawaii on vacation and you're like, holy shit. There's something about this place. And maybe it's not exactly Hawaii that you go to, but maybe it's some other remote location. It represents freedom for you. Regardless of what dreams are, I do believe that we create them out of ourselves. They have metaphor, symbolism, meaning, purpose. They're a playground. But we have to develop our senses around each dream, around each day of exploration, so that we can figure ourselves out. And for those of you having bad dreams, let me just end the episode on this. If you are a person that has nightmares, the chances are that in this world, this particular reality that we're sharing, you might be a little meek. Passive. You don't have confidence for whatever reason. Someone shook it out of you when you were a kid. Nightmares might be the most amazing tool for you to gain the confidence that you've always wanted in your entire lifetime. And there's a trick. Again, this happened to me when I was a kid. I had nightmares from probably 3 to 7. And what ended up happening, and I'm not going to retell the story because it's in my other dream episodes. Go listen if you want to hear those. But there's a point when you're in your dream, and it doesn't matter what is after you. What is creating the nightmare? What is freaking you out? Here's what I want you to do. Against all logic of this world, but you're going to find out it's going to work in this world really, really well. Okay. I want you to go after whatever's going after you. If there's a monster, a circumstance, whatever. Sometimes they're not monsters. Sometimes they're not things. Sometimes they're just in a weird place. I want you to, if you deal with a monster of any kind, some threat, some being of any kind, I want you to turn around, face that being, and say out loud to your best ability, I'm going to tear you limb from limb and then go and do it. And I don't care if it's Godzilla and he's 50 stories high. It's going to be like Bam Bam grabbing his big toe and you're going to slam that dude left, right, left, right, left, right until he is your bitch, right? But go after it. And you will find that there's no capacity in your brain for a fight within a dream. Not much anyway. You will start winning instantaneously beyond your wildest dreams. And when you wake up, you'll find out there's no monster in this reality that is remotely like the one in your dreams, in your nightmares. Now, you could be physically threatened by someone in this world and be manifesting a dream. In that case, maybe you don't go face to face with whatever is doing in this world, but you sure as hell can escape in most cases. Be quiet, don't tell anybody, and just, you know, vamoosh, right? But if you're in an existential moment, where you just simply find yourself in a place, and there's no one there, but it's just unnerving. It's illogical, perhaps. I once woke up in a dream where I was floating in blackness. There was no ground. There was no anything. I was floating in utter blackness, and the only thing I could potentially see was there seemed to be a very faint light source from somewhere. There was no point light in the room. I was sort of floating. I wasn't falling. That might have been a little bit more freaky. I'm not sure my dream can actually manifest that. But there was sort of that floating particle thing, you know, like there's just ambient particles in the air. It wasn't technically a nightmare, but it definitely didn't feel, you know, comforting to have no reference points for anything. And all I felt like is I was swimming. And I just made peace with it, and I closed my eyes. And I said, I'm just here. I'm just going to be here. And I woke up. And it was over. Everyone's been back since. Each nightmare can be defeated by a strategy. But it's not going to be by you being meek. It's going to be by you either coming to peace with it and saying, you know what, you can't hurt me. Or maybe you have to go after it. The only other solution I had to a dream that was sort of bizarre, this happened decades ago, I found myself in a dream that was, I was just in a place that I thought was sort of surrounded by evil, if you will. Nothing was presenting itself to me whatsoever. I felt threatened for the first few seconds, as if I was in some hopeless negative scenario, going to be overwhelmed by this negativity. But then I remembered that I believe in God. And those of you who are atheists can map this over to your own self-manifestation of power. But for those of you who are religious, you're going to like this. I didn't have Jesus, I had God. And I simply stood there. If I wasn't naked, I was just in my underwear. And I called down the power of God. And I created a fucking supernova in this universe of brightness and light. You know, you've seen the Death Star explode in Star Wars, right? Especially the revised ones where the has all the cool, you know, flangey kind of explosion noises. This was an explosion of light that was the size of the universe itself. It started off the size of a man floating in the universe, standing on a ball in a really weird place. But I called down this meganova, you know, and all of a sudden the camera pulled back, just like a movie, and this sphere, almost like a hydrogen bomb. But again, it just kept going boom, 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 boom. And it just kept getting bigger and more velocity and more intenseness. And I, in my mind, it was God reporting in for duty, causing this massive explosion of pure perfectness. And I knew that I was in the center and that nothing could exist inside God's space that was evil because he can't coexist with it. I know that we have a subjective definition of what is evil, but then we have, you know, some politicians that we know engage in it every day. But this thing just overwhelmed the entire universe and turned it from blackness to light. And when I came out of that dream, this is like maybe 35 plus years ago. I'm in my teens. Anytime I found myself in this world, where I felt like I was just surrounded by negativity. Like, it's almost that whole vision of sitting in the world and you just feel like you're just being attacked by demons, right? You're just, not really, not real, but just naggy, weird, negative feelings. You're just being open to it. And again, like the episode I made about the fact that negativity, I think, comes from the outside and positivity comes from the inside. You know, you don't own all the thoughts that you observe. Similar to that, I will sit wherever I am in the world and I'll supernova that baby with the power of the universe. And you'll be amazed how good you feel instantaneously. As if, again, around me is an infinitely large bubble of positivity created by the universe that can't be penetrated by evil. If you haven't tried it, try it. I was taught that by a dream. What if dreams are that powerful and that meaningful to those who endorse it, those who develop it? What if this is one of the biggest secrets of being a human being, is to understand that the dream world is really your workshop to perfect your life, to understand who you are, to understand what you're capable of, to understand your preferences, and to understand that you're not alone. no matter how alone you are in this reality, right? I think you feel me. If you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. There's audio, video, a locked Facebook group, a Patreon page, and a store link, which I think I need to renew the shirts that are in there. The website doesn't have like this thing where it's like, put a shirt up and just leave it up there. It's like, oh, I got to run a campaign. It's like, I don't want to run a campaign. I just want to have these shirts available all the time. While I am taking a break between season 3 and season 4, I promise to create more shirt concepts for you guys. Anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over and out. We'll be right back.